get ready to call. Just like Humpty Dumpty, I'm going to fall. And I'm sitting on top of the world. I'm rolling along, yes, rolling along. Don't want any million, I'm getting my share. I've only got one suit, just one, that's all I can wear. A bundle of money.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now on this Labor Day weekend is Sam Pizzagatti, who is a veteran labor journalist and associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He is an editor at the online newsletter Too Much, and he's the author of a new report released Wednesday by the Institute for Policy Studies, the 20th Anniversary Executive Excess Report. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sam Pizzagatti.
Thank you.
And the annual, and this is the 20th annual anniversary executive excess report, which came out this Wednesday, lists the CEOs of, in the United States, 241 corporate chief executives who were ranked among America's 25 highest paid CEOs for one or more of the past 20 years. And the categories are, and shall we go through the categories, or just in general, tell me why you feel that necessary, particularly when we're focusing on Labor Day weekend about the state of American labor, why are we talking about the CEOs? I think I know the answer, which is that they're outrageously paid compared to the workers.
Yes, and they've gotten outrageously paid by implementing policies that have hurt workers. They've gotten fantastically rich by downsizing, by outsourcing, by turning full-time jobs into part-time jobs, by rolling back pension and other benefits, by freezing wages, by refusing to pay decent wages in the first place. And they've taken all these actions because all these actions fatten the corporate bottom line, and their compensation is based on that bottom line. So there's a really good reason to talk about CEO compensation on Labor Day.
And now, in terms of the 40% of the top performing CEOs that were either bailed out, booted out, or busted, let's deal with the booted out. My understanding is that in spite of their poor performances, the CEOs who were booted out, their golden parachutes are valued at an average of $48 million? Is that?
Yes. Yes. They've these booted out CEOs occupied 14% of the 500 slots on our list. And they did walk away with average golden parachutes of $47.7 million. That's quite a bit for people who've been fired from their jobs.
And in terms of the busted, they're the ones that ended up, you know, charged and fined and had to settle for breaking the law. Give us some examples there, because I understand, you know, that even bigger payments have been shelled out for some of these people.
Yes, we looked at 19 of CEOs in this category. 18 of their corporations shelled out over $100 million each in fines or penalties. Yet these CEOs were made out like bandits. So, for instance, former Bristol Myers Squibb CEO Charles Heinbold, who later became George Bush's ambassador to Sweden, he received $450 million and never returned any of his compensation. His company paid $450 million in fines, and Heinbold never returned any of the compensation that he received.
And what did he get fined for?
He got fined for accounting fraud. Bristol Myers was found liable for all sorts of accounting frauds. In other words, under his leadership, Bristol Squibb cooked the books, and that's a very common phenomenon that we've seen in corporate America.
Well, of course, we have the example of the governor of Florida, who I think didn't he pay the biggest fine in corporate America, $1.7 billion for fraud, defrauding the government and defrauding Medicare.
Yes, he used to run one of the biggest private profit-making hospital chains in the United States.
And he's
which paid an enormous penalty.
And he was rewarded by the voters in Florida, and they made him governor.
That's right. After he shelled out a ton for a massive advertising campaign that whitewashed his image.
Right. So let's move on through your list here, Sam Pizzagatti, of the 20th Anniversary Executive Excess Report to the Men's Club, which, of course, indicates how few women are in corporate America. There was an interesting study recently indicating that a majority of households now, I'm not sure it's a majority, I think maybe it's up to 40% to 50, close to 50%. Of the households in the United States are now headed by a woman who's the primary breadwinner. So that's what's happening in the level of working Americans in the middle class. But at the top, the glass ceiling is well intact, is it not?
That's right. The CEO, the highly paid CEO club, is almost all male. In fact, only four women over the past 20 years have appeared in one of the annual lists of the most highly paid top 25 CEOs, only four over those 20 years. So what we're talking about here when we talk about the most highly paid CEOs is most definitely a purely men's club.
And the four women, how they're doing? I mean, is there...
Well, they're taking off after the men on the list. They're no great shakes in terms of what they're doing for working people in the United States. So, for instance, Carol Bartz over at Yahoo, during her short tenure there, she slashed 4% of the tech firm's workforce. In 2009, her first year on the job, she walked off with $45 million in compensation. She ended up getting fired 2 years later.
Where do you get jobs like that, Sam?
Well, you get them all the time in the chief executive suites of corporate America.
I see. So let's then talk about the billion-dollar club.
Yes. There are several CEOs who have made in their annual CEO compensation who have made over $1 billion over the past 20 years. Some of those names, well, actually all three of the names are quite familiar. Larry Ellison, who's the CEO at Oracle, who's now the corporate mover and shaker behind the America's Cup yacht races going on in San Francisco. Sanford Weill, the former Citigroup CEO, and of course Michael Eisner, the Disney CEO. All of them have made over $1 billion just in annual compensation.
And of course, in terms of Larry Ellison, that's small change, right?
That's small change. He's now, depending on the list, the third or fourth most wealthy billionaire in the world.
So, Sam Pizzagatti, let's then move on the 20th Anniversary Executive Excess Report list. Let's go to the next category, the Taxpayer Trough Club.
Yes. Well, I think this piece of it may be the most galling piece of all, that a number of the CEOs that we looked at on our 20 years worth of most highly paid CEO list, a number of the CEOs get their money by doing business with the government. Now, Americans really get upset when elected officials are getting rich at our expense. But we have these corporate CEOs who are getting far, far richer at our expense. The CEOs of defense contractors like Lockheed Martin, United Technologies, IBM, General Electric, Honeywell. These companies are rewarding their CEOs at incredibly high levels and have been doing this over the past 20 years. 12% of the 500 slots that we looked on the over the last 20 years are occupied by CEOs who essentially depend on tax dollars for all the business or the major portion of the business their companies do.
So they have socialized losses and capitalist gains, right? And they have the best of both worlds. They have cost plus socialism, so they get guaranteed bottom line covered, and then the government pays them a guaranteed profit.
That's right. So, and so we look at a company like Lockheed Martin. 82% of the revenues that Lockheed Martin now takes in on an annual basis come from the federal government, and a huge proportion of what's left come from state governments and other governmental bodies. Over the past 20 years, five times Lockheed Martin has had its CEO on the top 25 list, the annual top 25 list.
So have you looked into this new phenomenon where this other raid on the Treasury, because the military-industrial complex has been raiding the Treasury for decades throughout the Cold War, and more recently the contractor wing of the – or an adjunct to the military-industrial complex, the contractors, they've been raising the Treasury, and now you have – on top of that, you have the terrorism industrial complex that came after 9/11. They've been also raiding the Treasury. And now, following the Edward Snowden revelations, you also have the intelligence industrial complex. 70% of intelligence has now been privatized. So all of those, they're bad enough. But there's a new phenomenon that I've been covering lately, Sam Pizzagatti, and that is these for-profit colleges that are a complete rip-off. And even just a few days ago, the president, in a Q&A in Scranton, Pennsylvania, when he was out touting his program to lower college costs, was asked a question about these colleges, and he had acknowledged that there's some really bad actors there. But they get all of their money from the taxpayer. They get these young students, minority kids, vets. They get federal dollars, and they charge these loans back to these kids for an exorbitant interest rates, and then give them a worthless diploma if they even graduate, and they're saddled with a lifetime of debt. But at the same time, these CEOs, all of whom are entirely existing on federal money, are writing themselves massive paychecks. It's an extraordinary racket.
That's absolutely right. And what you've just described is a pattern of parasitic behavior. CEOs are supposed to add value to their enterprises, and their enterprises are supposed to add value to the economy. But I think what we see when we look at the CEOs of defense contractors, of private higher ed diploma mills, when we look at all these sorts of people, they're not adding any value. They're extracting value from the economy. They're extracting value from taxpayers. They're extracting value from exploited students. This is not the sort of economy that makes sense for average working Americans.
So how does this system of inflated paychecks for these CEOs who, whether they perform well or badly, it doesn't seem to matter, they still get enormous payoffs. How does that translate, for example, in terms of, you mentioned being parasitic. One of the things that I find extraordinary is that one of the richest corporations in the United States is Walmart, and they pay their people so poorly that most of them have to, you know, rely on state and federal public assistance for food and health care, etc. So the taxpayers end up having to supplement the Walmart employees' salaries. But at the same time, as they screw their workers, I don't know how much they compensate their CEOs, but the family that owns most of the stock, the Walton family, the heirs, and most of whom purely as an accident of birth ended up in this position, they talk about no value added. Apparently the family combined, their combined wealth represents the equivalent of the bottom 40% of all Americans. Is that?
Yes, and here's another statistic on that. At the end of last week, Bloomberg News calculates on a weekly basis the billionaires, the wealth of the billionaires of the leading billionaires of the world. At the end of last week, four of the 12 richest people in the world were heirs to the Walton, to the Sam Walton Walmart fortune. four of the top 12, a third of the richest dozen people in the world, owe their wealth to the Walmart empire.
And why do they need all of this money, more and more of it, at the expense of the very people who create that wealth for them, their workers?
Well, of course, there's no rational reason why they need more wealth. There's no rational reason why Larry Ellison pays himself $80-90 million every year from Oracle, the corporation he runs, when he's already one of the world's richest men. There's no rational reason. These huge paychecks, these huge fortunes, represent a power grab more than anything else. And until the power equation changes in the U.S. polity and the U.S. economy, we're going to continue to see this. But I think there's some good news here for Labor Day, and that is that a century ago, we had a situation very similar today. We had a situation where average working people were creating enormous wealth, and that wealth was being siphoned off by a precious few, by a very, very small elite in the United States. But 50 years later, in the middle of the 20th century, that plutocracy that existed at the beginning of the 20th century had essentially been smashed, and America had become the first mass middle-class nation in the history of the world. Now, and of course, in the years since then, particularly the last 30 years, that's eroded, and we have a plutocracy again. But we beat that plutocracy once. Why can't we beat it again? I think we can, and I know we must.
Well, Sam Pizzagatti, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Sam Pizzagatti, who's a veteran labor journalist and associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's the editor of the online newsletter Too Much, and he's the author of a new report released by the Institute for Policy Studies last Wednesday, the 20th Anniversary Executive Excess Report. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a longtime labor and social justice activist, Bill Fletcher, Jr.
Oh, the grocers, though we have fun. Tax collectors getting closer, still we have fun. There's nothing surer, the rich get rich and the poor get poorer. In the meantime, in between time, ain't we got fun?